Welcome to Tori Mecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Melachim Aleph, Parak Zion, Chapter 7. After spending time describing the beauty and intricacy of building the Beit HaMikdash in Parak Vav, Chapter 6, the first 12 psukim of Parak 7 turn towards the construction of Shlomo's palace. The structure of the parak is strange, as the end of the parak, at the end of our last parak, we finished with a discussion of the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Then we have 12 psukim about Shlomo's palace, and then psukim 13 to 51 go back to discussing the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. In fact, psukim Mem through Nun, 40 through 50, are the Haftorah for Parshat Vayakhel, according to the Ashkenazic custom, while Sfardim read psukim 13 to 26. Parshat Vayakhel, of course, discusses the creation of the vessels for the Mishkan. Considering that the last parak was a description of the building of the Beit HaMikdash, we see that there's almost an interruption of the story of the Beit HaMikdash with the construction of Shlomo's house, Shlomo's palace. Let's first look at the details of this parak, and then we're going to come back to this question. So we start off the parak, Pasuk Aleph, Ve'et Beito Bana Shlomo Shalosh Esrei Shana, Ve'echal Et Kol Beito. Shlomo finished building his house after 13 years, and he finished all of his house. And Shlomo's house was actually not just a palace, but a campus, a group of houses that Shlomo used for different purposes. First, we encounter in Pasuk Bet, Shlomo's Beit Ya'ar HaLevanon, his house of the forest of Lebanon. We encounter its great height, its arching ceilings, its cedar panelings, and it was just this wonderful, beautiful building. Rashi, following Targum Yonatan, explains that it's called Beit Ya'ar HaLevanon because this was Shlomo's summer palace, a place that was actually in the forest adjacent to Jerusalem, the Ya'ar Yerushalayim, that maybe reminded of this Ya'ar HaLevanon, the Lebanon forest, and it was a cool place to stay when the heat was high. Mitzudat David and Malbim cite this, as well as another opinion, that this was actually a description of Shlomo's palace, his regular palace in Yerushalayim, but it looked like a forest because the incredible amounts of cedar wood that was used on the panelings and on the pillars. So when you were in it, you had just a sense of being in a forest. In it, there was this Ulam Ha'amudim, a hall of pillars, and then there was even an Ulam, another hall, another antechamber leading to this hall of pillars. And Shlomo's actual palace, whether it was this a continuation or a different palace, it depends on how you read that Beit Ya'ar HaLevanon, but it explains Beito asher yashav sham chatzer ha'acheret mi beit la'ulam kamaseh hazeh haya, that he also, in his other palace, had also these antechambers upon antechambers, meaning there were halls that led to halls with this just grand structure of being in large rooms that lead to other large rooms. And it definitely made an impact when you have this type of construction. It's just so grand when you're walking in. He also, it explains, made a palace for Bat Paro. Obayit yaseh l'Bat Paro asher lakach Shlomo ku'ulam hazeh. Shlomo made a palace for Bat Paro, and it was constructed in a similar manner with these antechambers. Pasuk 13 brings us back to the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. We learn that there was a lot of detailed craftsmanship associated with its construction, and they are now going to meet the person in charge of this craftsmanship. Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, Vayishlach HaMelech Shlomo, Shlomo sent, Vayikach et Chiram mitzor. He took a person named Chiram from Tyre in the north, from Tsor. Now, it's a little bit confusing because the king of Tsor, who Shlomo had been in contact with to access all of the Atzei Arazim, the cedars of Lebanon that he used to build the Beit HaMikdash, was also named Chiram. But this is a craftsman from Tsor who is also named Chiram. They have the same name. And then we learn a little bit about Chiram's background in Pasuk Yudalad, verse 14. Ben Isha Amana, hu mimatei Naphtali. He is the son of a widow, and he's from the Shevet of Naphtali. Va'aviv ish Tzuri, and his father was a man of Tzur, also of Tyre. Chorish Nechoshet, he was a craftsman of copper. Va'imalei et ha'chachma ve'et ha'tuna ve'et ha'dat la'asot kol melacha b'Nechoshet. And he was filled with wisdom and understanding and knowledge in order to do all this special craftsmanship in copper. Va'yavo el ha'melech Shlomo va'yaseh kol melachto. And he came, this Chiram came to Shlomo, and he did all of his work, meaning he was in charge of the craftsmanship, the copper craftsmanship in the Beit HaMikdash. And Hiram created magnificent structures to put in the Beit HaMikdash that enhance the aesthetic look and grandeur, as well as the functionality of the Mikdash. And I just want to point out that we're going to return, his background is a little bit murky, Hiram's background, who was his mother, who was his father, and we're going to return to that later on after we finish going through the parak. One of the things that he made were these two enormous copper pillars, and they actually had names, Yachin and Boaz. These pillars were 18 amot high, so depending on what you think of an amma, a minimum of 28 feet or over 8.5 meters, and that's about the size of a three-story building. These pillars were decorated in intricate copper workmanship, and according to the Radak, the names Yachin and Boaz were supposed to remind people that as they entered through these pillars, which was the entrance of the Beit HaMikdash, they should think of the ideas. To quote the Radak, Yachin is an expression of establishment, that the Beit HaMikdash should be Yachin, established forever. And Boaz is an expression of strength, a contraction of the word Bo'oz, or strength within, meaning Hashem should place in it, in the Beit HaMikdash, strength and endurance. Besides for the pillars, Hiram created a huge copper basin known as, closer in size as to a reservoir, known as the Yam Shel Shlomo, this ocean or this massive water source of Shlomo. And through a series of pipes and tunnels, really unbelievable workmanship, this became a place for the Kohanim to wash their feet as they entered the Beit HaMikdash. The Yam was placed on an intricately designed base that had copper oxen holding it up, among other decorations. The end of the parak details all of the vessels that Shlomo made for the Beit HaMikdash, the basins, the shovels, the pots, all of them made from copper. And the Pasuk even says in Pasuk Men Zayin 47, Vayanach Shlomo et kol hakelim merov ma'od ma'od, the doubleness of the word ma'od, lo nechkar mishkal nechushat. Shlomo couldn't weigh all of his vessels because there were too many, and the weight of the copper and the brass, it couldn't be measured because it was really too much. And it just gives you a sense of how much work was put into the Beit HaMikdash. And then in addition to all the copper work, there were also many vessels made of gold, like bowls, shovels, plates, but also including the Mizbeach HaZahav, the golden altar, the Shulchan, the special table for the Lechem HaPanim, the special showbread, and also he had 10 golden menorahs, 5 on each side of the room. And then the Pasuk concludes with Shlomo finishing his work of the Beit HaMikdash. The parak ends, Vatishlam kol hamlacha asher asah ha-melech Shlomo Beit Hashem. Shlomo finished all of his work for the house of Hashem. Vayaveh Shlomo et kadshei David aviv, et ha-kesef, et ha-zahav, et ha-kelim, natan ba-otzrot Beit Hashem. And he brought all the things that David had dedicated. It wasn't only him who made things, but David also had made things. And Shlomo brought all of these things to the Beit HaMikdash, bringing in his father, David, and what David had prepared. Now let's get back to our original question in terms of the structure. The description of the palace really does interrupt the story of the construction of the Beit HaMikdash, which takes up most of the room in this parak, and then continues into our next parak, Chapter 8, which is Shlomo's tefillah, which he has in honor of the dedication of the Beit HaMikdash. Furthermore, in Divrei HaYamim, when this topic is discussed, Divrei HaYamim doesn't even mention any details of the construction of Shlomo's palace, and it only mentions that it was built, but we don't get really any information about it other than it was built. And perhaps, so in order to understand this, perhaps I'd like to propose that the structure here in this parak represents this larger theme in Shlomo's life, and that is a tension that exists in his life and his life work. And that is, who are you, Shlomo HaMelech? What is your aim? What is the aim of the empire? Are you a king of universalism? Are you a king of the world? Are you a king of over the entire area? And one who's looking to spread, one is looking to make treaties. And we learn in Perek Hay about when we discuss the establishment of Yerushalayim as almost a center of wisdom of the entire region. And how people would come to Yerushalayim to learn from Shlomo and all the Mishalim, all the different things that he said, all the different wisdoms that Shlomo was able to give out. And in this way, this is Shlomo, and this kind of represents this idea of his palace, that when people would come to Shlomo, they would be so overwhelmed and impressed with how grand and large his palace. Imagine walking into a vast chamber that felt like an indoor forest. And the artistry was so masterful and exemplified Shlomo's tremendous power and wisdom. And this palace complex also housed a special place for Bat Paro, the daughter of Paro, Shlomo's first marriage that represented a treaty with another country. Obviously, marriages at this time are treaties between countries. And this a strategy of treaties is a useful strategy for a king who is a king of shalom, of peace, that doesn't want to go to war, meaning now Shlomo and Mitzrayim are not going to have to go to war because they have this marriage treaty, which is a very, very strong treaty. On the other hand, Shlomo is a king of particularism. He's a king only for the Jewish people. He's a king whose life's goal is to bring the people closer to Hashem, and this is represented by the Beit HaMikdash. And the artistry of the Beit HaMikdash is not only for grandeur, but for meaning, for purpose. Meaning, there's a Mizbeach. Yes, it's grand, but there's a purpose. It's to serve Hashem. There are menorahs, but they have a purpose. There's a parochet. There's a curtain separating the Kodesh Kodashim and the Kodesh, the Heichal and the Devir, but they have a purpose. It's to serve Hashem. Even Yachin and Boaz, those two pillars that actually don't seem to have any purpose, they are really just grandeur, they're named. And that's very unusual to name a pillar. Pillars are usually just pillars. But these grand columns at the entrance of the Beit HaMikdash have names that encourage people who enter to connect to Hashem, to think about Hashem. And as you enter this grand structure, it's not just a grand structure. It's a Beit HaMikdash. It's a Beit Hashem. And Professor Yehuda Kiel in Dat Mikra notes that Shlomo built his house lower than the Beit HaMikdash, which we know from Sefer Yirmiyahu, Parak 26, that when the officers of the palace went to the Beit HaMikdash, it says they went up. And perhaps this move was to show everyone his priorities are in order, meaning I'm a universalist and I want to spread wisdom and I want to spread knowledge of Hashem, but everything I do in my political life is in service of Hashem. The Beit HaMikdash is the highest. And this idea between the tension and the between universalism and particularism is really relevant in the discussion of Hiram, the master craftsman. Hiram's background, as we noted, is very murky. Here, it tells us here that he is Ben Isha Amana. He's the son of a widow. Humimate Naphtali, he is from the tribe of Naphtali, the Aviv Ish Tzur. And his father Sori Choresh Nechoshet, and his father is a person of Tzur who is a copper craftsman. But in Divrei Hayamim, we also have a story about Shlomo hiring Hiram. And there it says that his mother was from Benot Dan, not from Naphtali. And also it doesn't say that Shlomo just sent for him. Divrei Hayamim adds that Shlomo actually asked the king, for a recommendation of a master craftsman, and Hiram, the king, recommended this Hiram. So Radak and Mitzudat David put together Hiram's background by saying that Hiram's mother was this widow from Dan, who was from Shevet Dan, and his father was from Shevet Naphtali, and a long time ago they had moved to Tzur, and they lived there for a long period of time, so his father was called Ish Tzuri, a person of Tzur. Rabag raised the possibility that he didn't even live in Tzur, but rather Ish Tzuri is from the Shoresh Sayar, an artist, so his father, that they actually lived in Israel, but his father was an artist, and that's why he's called Ish Tzuri, Ish Saban, who is a Tzayar. Now, Abarbanel, though, raises a totally different possibility. And that is the possibility that Hiram was actually not Jewish. He was a craftsman from Tzur. And the reason it mentions Shevet Naphtali is because Hiram, says the Abarbanel, married a woman from Shevet Naphtali. He intermarried and married a Jewish woman. And therefore, he's called by his wife's Shevet, and it was his wife's mother who was the widow from Shevet Dan. And according to the Abarbanel, this is why Shlomo didn't allow Hiram to do any of the gold and silver work of the Beit HaMikdash, only the lesser copper work, because it wasn't appropriate to give this type of work to a non-Jew. And this would explain why Shlomo didn't know of him. He didn't know of Hiram. But Hiram, the king of Tzur, you know, he must have really been an exceptional craftsman, but Hiram knew about him because he was a person from Tzur. And it was known to the people of Tzur, not to the people of Israel. This last comment of the Abarbanel echoes what we've been talking about. Who should Shlomo use to be the craftsman in charge of the Beit HaMikdash? Should he use somebody from Israel, somebody Jewish, even if they're not the best? Or should he seek out the best craftsmen from Tsur who might be more skilled? And Shlomo does that, meaning he chooses to use the wood from Tsur because it's the best wood. He doesn't use wood from Israel. They don't have these atzei arazim. And in a similar vein, he uses the craftsmen from Tsur. And Shlomo clearly chooses the latter because he reaches out to Hiram and asks him for a recommendation for a master craftsman. And yet this situation puts constraints on Shlomo, according to the Abarbanel, because he found this master craftsman, but he can't allow him to do the holiest of the metalwork, the gold and silver for the Beit HaMikdash. In fact, Dr. Gabi Barzilai points out that Hiram has a very similar pasuk about him as does Bezalel ben Uri, who built the Kelim of the Mishkan. And he says they're actually parallel characters, and yet when you look at the psukim about them, you hear that there is a difference. About Hiram, it says, he is filled with the wisdom and the knowledge and understanding to do all of the copper work. And about Bezalel, it says, I will fill him with a ruach elokim, b'chachma u'b'tzvuna u'b'da'at u'b'chol melacha, l'chshol machshavot l'asok b'zahav u'b'kesef b'nechoshet. So you hear this addition of, I will fill him with the Spirit of God in his wisdom and his knowledge and his understanding to do all this work. And he will be able to think thoughts in order to do this gold, silver, and copper work. So the work of the Mishkan is filled with this Ruach Elohim. It was Hashem who chose the artisan for the Mishkan, and it was Shlomo who chose the artisan for the Beit HaMikdash. Clearly, Shlomo didn't necessarily have a choice for Hashem to choose the artisan, but this is Hashem's insertion of Bezalel into the creating of the Mishkan, somebody who is filled with a Ruach Elohim. And this perhaps also is represented in their names. Bezalel is Bezalel. He is in the shadow of God. And Hiram has the same name as the non-Jewish king. Now, being a universal king is not necessarily a bad thing. We learn in Yeshayahu, Parak Bet, chapter 2 of Isaiah, the nevuah of the end of days of Achrit Hayamim, and it's one of all the nations coming to the Beit HaMikdash to serve Hashem. There's certainly a universal nature to Yeshayahu's famous nevuah in the sense of Kimitzion Tetzei Torah Udvar Hashem Yerushalayim. Torah will come out of Yerushalayim and spread to the entire world, and all the nations will say, let's go to the Beit HaMikdash. Let's go to Har Beit Hashem, to the mountain of the house of God, and we're going to learn from their ways. And Shlomo was doing that. He was spreading the sense of Hashem to this entire region. He was a person of shalom because of his peace treaties, because of his chachma, because of his osher, because of his wisdom and his wealth. He was able to spread the name of Hashem. And yet there's a tension. Who are you, Shlomo? Are you the king of universalism, or are you the king of particularism? And what should be the role of a king? What should be the role of a Jewish king? What should be the role of the Jewish people? Is that our role in the world, or is our role more particular, insular? Should there be expansionism, or should we be looking inward? Should we be trying to influence the world, or should we be trying to influence ourselves? And when are we our best selves? And this all is brought out, I think, in this perek of the interruption of the story of the Beit HaMikdash with the story of the construction of Shlomo's palace. Thank you for studying together. Le'iloi Nishmat, Frida Bat Moshe Eliyahu.